now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from Class the Cult to the Cheese Between. The movies are B, but the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti, joined by that Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good morning, Jason. Today we've got another Jason. This is part 5 of Friday the 13th, and it's called A New Beginning.
And we'll get to it right after this.
If the memory of Jason still haunts you, you're not alone. Friday the 13th, part 5, A New Beginning.
Severe trauma at age 12. Brutal self-defense murder of a psychopathic killer. Boy, they've given him every therapy they can think of. It's a wonder his mind isn't fried with all the drugs they've given him.
Mindless, murderous fury that was buried with Jason has been reborn.
Pete!
And suddenly, terror has become child's play. Friday the 13th. Part 5, A New Beginning.
Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, was released March 22nd, 1985. Yes, I understand that's not a Friday the 13th. It doesn't make sense to me either. With a 92-minute running time. Your director is Danny Steinman. Danny Steinman is... He was known for the production associated with Arthur Miller's The Man in the Glass Booth, and he served as an associate producer for the Gene Roddenberry TV supernatural film Spectre, not to be confused with the, you know, the new movie Spectre. He was, as a director, you would know him from 1980's The Unseen, and then 84's Savage Streets, which probably most of you guys know him if you know him, and then, of course, this movie, he only directed those few films. Screenplay by David Cohen, Danny Steinman, and Marty Katorcer. Stories also by them. Character obviously's are based on Victor Miller. Your production company is you're produced by Georgetown Pictures Inc. and Terra Inc., which is also then distributed by Paramount, because this was Paramount's baby. Harry Manfredini, of course, on your music. Your budget is a paltry $2.2 million, and your box office is $21.9 million. And this marked the return of the Friday the 13th franchise after Part 4, which was supposed to be the final Friday, or the final chapter. And now, even the poster says it, if Jason still haunts you, you're not alone. Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning. And for those of you in the know that this is not actually the return of Jason, but the return of, and we'll talk about that as we get there. But this is also the second in, depending on what you, how you want to look at things, the movies, the Friday the 13th movies go in either you group them by threes. 1, 2, and 3 are the Jason Voorhees, you know, like backstory kind of story. He becomes Jason Voorhees. 4, 5, and 6 are the Tommy Jarvis trilogy. And then making 7, 8, and well, it's 9, which is Jason Goes to Hell, part of the full-born zombie trilogy. But you can also look at 1, 2, 3, and 4 as actual Jason movie, you know, Friday the 13th with Jason, you know, in them. 5 stands by itself as nothing. 6, 7, 9, and then 10, you can start looking at them as the zombie Jason era. But it's all 7, 8. Yeah. And so it's just, there's a lot of different ways you can cut these, all these things up. Shot in California, wind up grossing, you know, 10 times the amount. It is, like I said, it's normally known as, this is the second trilogy in these, that you look at them together as they don't group together. So 2, 3, and 4 get grouped as Jason Voorhees, as, you know, whatever. And then you can kind of group this with those together, but you also can group 4, 5, and 6 as the Tommy Jarvis trilogy. Anyway. All right. So several years after killing Jason Voorhees in Part 4, a teenage Tommy Jarvis is tormented by nightmares of the mass murderer, resulting in his internment in numerous psychiatric hospitals. Okay. So this movie opens with the cameo from, what's from Corey Feldman. And Corey Feldman was on set. He came to set for one day, shot all his scenes. They put him in a raincoat, put him in the rain. And they shot all his scenes of him just reacting in the woods to Jason Voorhees, which turned out to be the dream sequence that opens the movie. The whole point trying to tie in Corey Feldman into this movie, which became tough because it's a couple years later and he clearly is older. But we had to kind of like, you know, they tried to hide how much bigger he was by kind of having him standing hidden most of it. Yeah. You something you want to add? No.
Yeah, to me, that when the movie opened, I mean, I said, it's definitely a dark and stormy night to visit Jason's grave. And if you had not seen any of them, and this one said A New Beginning, you would assume, okay, so the story's going to start over. My only thing is, Jason is definitely, I mean, if he's definitely the killer that they understood, and he dies in number 4, why would you just put his grave basically not in the middle of a graveyard, but just in the middle of the woods with his headstone? And then you got two numbnuts coming up. They got to have the nerve to open up the grave. And sure enough, that's exactly how it starts. And they don't make it. Then with Corey Feldman in the woods, you know, it's got to be a dream sequence. And then when he wakes up and now he's what, 18, 19 years 18, old?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I said, that's a pretty good premise for the rest of the movie. Cause it starts, so you're hooked right away. You know that it's a number of years later and then the story begins basically. But the only thing is he's now at a really different kind of mental.
It's like a halfway house. It's like not a halfway house. So yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah.
And they're kind of lax with how they keep tabs on the inmates. I'll call them inmates, but they're really just patients. But the other question: Why would you allow a patient to have a switchblade knife? But it does. But they show you that.
But they don't know he has it.
Yeah. Well, no. But I'm saying, wouldn't you go through his? Because in his bags, he has no clothes. He's got the horror mask, and he's got a switchblade knife. Now, by showing you that and then getting away from it, it plays a part later on in the movie.
Right. Yeah, you're setting everyone up. It's Chekhov's gun. So the whole point is that, you know, that Tommy Jarvis has now been bounced around from the mental institutions. As we know, it happens in the four when he cuts his hair and he winds up killing Jason. And then, I mean, the thing is, the whole point of it is they make a very big point of this in the beginning, saying that no one's ever blamed him for what he did. This person was killed his family, was attacking his sister. He's just protecting them, and that his natural instincts took over. And that, so it's a lot of people trying to feel bad for him that, like, he went through this. It's a very traumatic situation. So without saying PTSD, they're talking about PTSD. Yeah. Nowadays you would have like some psychiatrist talking about this and that. And the other thing, this is not the way things were in 1985. And that the idea that the mental institution where they're working, this kind of like halfway house where they have rules and they have more freedom and stuff like that, is to try to help them get back into society, which is, you know, some of those forward thinking things. This is the problem, but not the problem. But like, you see this as a repeated theme in the Friday the 13th movies. Every single time they try to reopen the camp, it's for underprivileged children from the city. It's for mentally, people who have mental instability. It's for, you know, that it's always something where they're trying to be altruistic and help people. And they just set themselves up to be fodder for, you know, whatever killer. And we saw this again in sleepaway camps, the sleepaway camps 2 and 3. You see it in the Burning is just a literal summer camp. So it's not even like, I mean, it's a summer camp for like kids who are a smidge older, but I'm saying, but like, that wasn't set up to be saving everyone's lives. But the whole point is this idea that they are doing good, that people who are doing good, even though they're doing the right thing for the right reasons, still can get slaughtered. Was one of the things I think they were trying to change, because what happens in this movie, you have to make sure that everybody who is doing things they're not supposed to be doing is being punished, because that's what slasher movies are. They're nothing more than morality tales that we've seen over and over again, just like fairy tales were, like real fairy tales, not the Disney versions, kind of thing, where the wicked get punished and the pure of heart survive and all that stuff like that. But that's part of what happens with this, is that you're setting this up going, okay, so now why are they back in the woods? Why would they be in the woods again? You just had somebody kill all these people in the woods. Well, now it's not even the same woods. It's not even the same thing. Like, it's, you know, it's near there, but now you have a place that they're going to, well, who's going to sell them land to put a, you know, as they would say, you know, the nut house there kind of thing. Right. So no one wants them there. So you have to buy land that's unsellable.
Right.
To put something.
Well, that's, I think that's the premise. You've got an idyllic situation for a camp that is not buildable for a corporation or a,
right, because you've now had how many murder sprees occurring,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. You know, all these people have all been killed at this place, so there's nothing you can do there. So you, and again, it's not always the exact same camp. It's always like right next to it, right next to it. But that's one of the reasons why they you can have a setup like this, because most people, even in the 80s, nowadays it would be like way worse, but like, you know, if you're going to have something where like, well, we have a halfway house here and people come up in arms and fight this tooth and nail, but now if you're buying land that they can't sell, well, like, who would allow this to happen? Well, the state would. We can't sell something. They're not going to sit on a piece of property. They're going to try to sell it. So they sell it to somebody who's, you know, on paper is doing something that looks totally good. You can present that to people and, you know, like, look, we can't sell this land otherwise. Why don't we have them here doing these things? And they're in the woods. The whole idea is that they're not in the middle of the city. You have to be isolated away from everybody, because what we know is that the setups to all of the stories until we get to part 8, and that's only the back half of part 8, everything has to be local, small town, in the woods, rural. And until literally the last third of part 8, when he's in Manhattan, is there ever a time when Jason Voorhees is anywhere but in the woods or a small town?
Yeah. And yet, you know, during this period of time, there were other movies with crazy guys killing people, like Joe Spinelli.
Okay. Maniac was 1980. Yeah, was very, very different.
I understand it was different, but it was based in a city.
But Maniac is a very different kind of Maniac. He's not a supernatural force. He's just a crazy person. Yeah. It's just like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. Like, those are based on things that there is no Jason Voorhees as the idea that he's a boy who drowned, who then comes back at the end to avenge his mother's death after she avenged his death. Like, we're already way out of here. Somebody in 1980s New York City, like a large hulking guy who walked around the city and like murdered women. Yeah, Yeah. That totally could happen. And that what I'm saying is, does it a little different. These movies fall more in line, obviously, with the whole idea of now, because now we're getting more away from to the part one is a murder mystery. We know where, right. where the mother's killing people. And that, in theory, could happen. Now that we're talking about, you have this child who drowns and now comes now as a grown man. And the next one, like they don't ever explain that stuff. And that's the whole point with these. That's one of the things with Friday the 13th. You cannot start pulling on the little strings. You have to just accept the fact that this is what these are. Whereas something that's more grounded in reality, the maniacs, the Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, eventually Man Bites Dog, like things like that, that are grounded more in reality. That's why those movies are so disturbing and people truly hate them, right? That's why there was such an outrage when Silent Night, Deadly Night happened. Because they're showing someone dressed as Santa Claus murdering people. But could it happen that somebody, you know, is dressed like a Santa Claus and like, you know, and killed? I mean, he kills the father, the original guy kills the father and rapes the mother and then butchers her. Or this kid sees it. That's going to mess somebody up, you know, kind of thing. And that's why those were so vilified. I mean, that was more because it was Santa Claus, but it's saying, but those things are more grounded. This is just the idea that it's, you have to just buy in what they're doing. The issue with this one is that there are so many red herrings in this movie, and this whole movie is just basically a bunch of red herrings of who, you know, you're trying to be like, well, wait, what's going on here? Like, it should just be Jason Voorhees. Why are they setting up these other people to be not? This is why this starts the set of the quad. This is the reset. This is Friday the 13th Part 5 is number one all over again. It is shot like Part 1 again. They don't show you who's killing people. In part 2, 3, and 4, you see Jason Voorhees just slaughtering people. Isn't there not hiding who it is? He's killing people, right? This is set up like a murder mystery again. Why? Because they're trying to reestablish things. So when you look at it the same way you watch part 1, but now we already have knowledge of what's occurred 4 times before, you know? So.
Yeah. The thing what I find with these movies is that the premise can be, you know, pretty much the same movie to movie. But the other thing that's always the same is how they introduce the characters. The characters are all stereotypical in each and every movie, different scenario, but they're introduced. And so you wind up, you said, well, okay, we've seen 7 people. By the end of the movie, every one of them is going to die a different way. You know that going in. So you when I was watching this movie, I'm trying to figure out, because the plot's always the same. Who's going to die first? How are they going to die? And why are they going to die? And sure enough, each and every character has a flaw that is exploited, and bingo, they're off the roll call.
Yeah. All right. So so Tommy Jarvis arrives. He's eventually transferred to the Pinehurst Halfway House, which is managed by Matt Letter. And his assistant, Pam Roberts. Those are the two adults in this. Tommy meets the circle of other teens, including Eddie and Tina, who are the lovers who are off, as they say, screwing in the woods. Jake, who's the one who stutters. Violet, who is a punk rocker. Violet actually is, whose daughter is she? She's one of the other people in the Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Elm Street. It's her actual real-life daughter got the role independent of her. But it was kind of like the connection between the two films. I think it's Nightmare on Elm Street. I got to remember. It's in Never Sleep Again, a great documentary if you get a chance to watch it. You get Robin, who's the real serious, like more serious of them. Joey, who's kind of the big slob, always eaten. Reggie the Reckless. If those of you who know your Different Strokes, you know Reggie from Different Strokes. And whose grandfather, George, is the cook. We also see... then there's a couple others, but then you also, at this point, you start to meet the neighbors, who is Ethel and her, you know, who is just supposed to be absolutely disgusting kind of thing, right? And hers, her son, you know, that's a very straight tree that he's coming from there, so to speak. So the group is disliked by the neighbors, Ethel, as Eddie and Tina are found to be engaging in having sex on her property. For this reason, Matt forbids the group from venturing outside of the facility's premises. Vic, another patient institute. He's the one, he's the more of a punk guy. He's chopping wood. And so this is this. Okay. So this is what winds up happening. You have Joey coming, and Joey is just a mess. He's just an absolute slob. And He's eating chocolate bars. And, you know, again, you're looking at him going, okay, there's something wrong with him. You know, whatever his mental, you know, disability might be, whatever, or not disability, but like it nowadays that he would present as being probably autistic or being on the spectrum. But we didn't talk about those things in 1985 because people just like he's special. And you don't have to like that stuff. That's how things were. But he goes and he's going to try to help the girls. But of course he gets chocolate all over the white sheets and they are like, and then he starts bothering Vic. And the problem is every single person and who ever seen this movie says, why does he start bothering Vic? Because he doesn't understand that Vic is really unstrung. He's chopping wood, which would not be the job I would have given Vic. But he's good at chopping the wood, right? And Joey's bothering and bothering and bothering. And what happens is Vic then gets mad and then slams the axe into Joey and then hacks him to pieces. So our first killing on screen is not by Jason Voorhees. It's by Vic, which is a total twist because that's what they're doing. They're setting you up and kind of turning you down a different road. And that's when we have the coroners come or the paramedics come, right? Where am I here? I just moved. Vic, another patient in the institute, is gripped in a fit of madness caused by Joey's constant pestering and brutally kills him with an axe, leading to his arrest. That evening, okay, so then that's when we first meet the paramedics. And one of those paramedics is Roy, who would become more important later on kind of thing, right? So you have the sheriff, you have whatever. So after they take that in, now we have two greasers, which makes, I don't know why they're there. But again, this movie is a conundrum wrapped in a question, wrapped in an enigma at times. And at times, it's the most straightforward movie they make. And it has some of the best, my problem is this movie has some of the most killer lines in the series. And it's because it's in one of the, like my least favorite movie of the entire series. So what winds up happening, of course, is, you know, you have these two greasers and they're on the side of the road trying to get their car to work. And one has to go in, you know, he's going to take a dump in the woods, which, you know, is always super fun in a movie. And then they are both murdered by an unseen assailant. Now you're thinking to yourself going, well, they just arrested Vic. This has got to be Tommy, right? This has got to be Tommy breaking away because they're not showing this. But why are they not showing it? If it's Jason Voorhees, why are we not seeing Jason Voorhees in a mask, chopping him up? Because that became the hallmark of these movies. You don't have to hide the killer when the killer is the reason you're going to the movies. In the Scream movies, we don't have to hide the fact that Ghostface is killing people. Whoever Ghostface might be, and that changes movie to movie, obviously changes throughout the movie, that we know who that is. It's not like we're there because we're like, oh, I wonder who's happening. You know, it has to be Ghostface or it has to be Michael Myers or it has to be Leatherface or it has to be Jason Voorhees, but yet they're hiding him from you. So he murders the two of them, which is fine. That has the road flare to the mouth, which is one of the, that effect did not age well. It didn't look good in 1985. The road flare in the mouth, you can see how fake the head looks. It looks to be wax. It is, but it's fine. I mean, you know, you have to remember also it's 1985.
Yeah, so. I mean, but the cut is quick. So
you see it though. And yeah. So probably on VHS back in the day or on TV, it didn't matter as much.
Yeah.
But on all cleaned up now, yeah, it's so obvious a fake head. But you're not, again, you're not watching Friday the 13th part 5 because you're like, ooh, I hope there's a real deep story and it has the best special effect. You want to see the kills.
Yeah,
and we've never seen someone kill with a road flare before.
Yeah.
Now we have.
But again, that whole sequence was just the two characters that get killed in that sequence.
Who cares? Yeah. They're just fodder.
They're just fodder.
Yeah.
Like you said, the key is later on.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't see who did the killing. I mean, the one idiot, he goes into the woods and he keeps walking into the woods. He didn't even bring any paper with him.
Yeah, well.
I mean,
you have to stop with the logic here and just go, why are they dressed like this? Why are we in a different mood? Why are we? This isn't Halloween.
No, that's what I mean.
It's clearly the summer.
Again, I've told you this many times. On these movies, when I'm watching it, all of my logic has to go away.
Yeah, I keep telling you that, but yet you keep trying to apply logic to it.
But can I look at it? Because my interest in the movie at that scene stops, and I no longer am involved with the movie. My mind races to think, boy, that was what an idiot. And then this, why would they put this in the, I said, you know, why would you put that in the movie? If you had, I mean, you have a whole slew of characters that You've introduced all the patients at the
I know.
Why introduce two new ones just to kill them in two different ways? And that to me is that's
because you are padding out the film to be 92 minutes. You need a certain amount of kills. But that's a form. We talked about this. There's literally a formula.
Yeah, no, but a formula. If you have a formula that's supposed to get you to a finished product, when you throw in something inane like that, when you've got enough characters that you can show why they're being killed, these two are just. They're happenstance. They're just stuck on the road.
Right. Well, that's what. But it makes sense later when you realize who the actual killer is.
Yeah. But then you look back and say, why would he be the the killer?
Well, I got all the reasons for this stuff, okay. Dad. I have literally watched every documentary, read every book. Like okay. I don't know what you. I can't just give it all away now. No, stop listening to the podcast. The five people who are listening, I'm going to turn it off if they don't have to hear now. So. Anyway, so he kills two of them. Then we cut to the waitress, the diner at the diner, right? And you have one, the boyfriend, who's the other paramedic,
right
kind of thing, who's also a cokehead. And he also is the guy from the Micro Machines commercials, which that's what everyone knows him for, because he's the fastest talker in the world kind of thing. And Lana is taking her sweet time getting done. He's honking the horn. And that's when he's doing the coke, he's doing lines of coke in the car. And it has literally one of the best lines in the entire series when she goes in the bathroom and rips her shirt open and she goes, "It's showtime!" Because they literally, Showtime had just debuted that as their line and they used that and they were like, "We're going to get sued." They're like, "Cool, lawsuit would be good for us." And they didn't get sued. But that line, everyone knows it's showtime because it's been ripped off how many hundreds of times later on, and it became, there was the first time it was being ripped off. So, of course, Lana is, there she hears something in the diner. And it's the cat. She got to put the cat outside, which gave the paramedic a time to get himself slaughtered outside and dumps all the coke on the floor, right?
Yeah.
Which, and you know, there's somebody in there and go, "That's a lot of coke," you know, kind of thing on the floor. And of course, that's what Lana's thinking. She gets there, has a lot of coke on the floor. So she's just doing bumps of coke off the floor, which then gets her killed, right? But again, they're never showing you. They just show you kind of pants. They kind of show you that they're kind of generic pants. They kind of show you generic arm. There's right. No
and shoes.
You don't see any face, any distinctive scars. There's nothing. It's not like their hands are all burned. There's nothing giving away who's murdering them. So following those killings that night, the sheriff hypothesizes that Jason Voorhees has come back to life and is perpetrating the murders. While Tommy himself is rendered as a very suspicious party, because you're supposed to believe that it's Tommy Jarvis. You're supposed to believe that he's kind of unhinged. Well, the whole point is that, again, as I said, this whole movie is full of red herrings, right? The next morning, Eddie and Tina, of course, go into the forest to have sex because why not? And smoke a joint because, hey, if you're going to break all the rules, go for it, right? They are being watched by the farmhand Ethel's place. So the reason that guy is there is just to be a red herring. His pants match the pants that the other guy, the killer's wearing, 100%. You don't know who he is. He's just a drifter, whatever. And he goes, and he's watching him have sex, right? And you're like, okay. Like, so they've now shown me this guy. He now can't be the killer because now you know he ain't going to show me the killers in the woods. And what happens? He gets killed. Yeah. It's just another body to happen there. Now, this is where we get two of the kills that have become pretty famous are this scene right here. Because what you wind up having is, where is it? So, after they have sex, the Eddie goes to go wash up in the pond, but you have Tina laying there on the ground. And the woman who played Tina, she goes, "Thank God we did this when I was young, because my boobs look like crap now," or that kind of thing. Because she looks great laying there, because it's hard. When you're laying down, the boobs ain't going to work well. And when you're young, it's okay. But that's when he literally puts the shears in and slices right through the parts, right through her eyes. That is one of people's most favorite kills of all time in these movies, because it's so like, oh my God, because it's eyes, which a lot of people have a lot of issues with. And that's not even going back to, like, you can go back to Fulci, you can go back to anything like when Zombie, when they break the thing off in her eye. Stuff bothers a lot of people. It's great because it doesn't dismember her. It kills her and she's able to still look like she's laying there asleep. Eddie comes back and he goes, "What are you sleeping?" And then he gets grabbed and he gets the belt across his face. And then he starts twisting the belt. And people are like, "What a way, that's an ingenious way to kill somebody." Because you have the shears, right? You have some other weapon. You killed the other guy. Well, you got weapons with you, but no, he kills him with a belt. and just like breaks it, crushing his skull against the tree, and then that kills him, right? So that's part of the ingenious part of that whole scene. Now, that scene is cut to ribbons when it was on TV because of the nudity. So they always had to cut the nudity, but then they had to cut the eye gore, the not eye gore, but the eye gore, you know, kind of thing, because it was so realistic looking. They couldn't show that on network TV. They couldn't show it even on USA or anything like that. So they had to blur her entire chest out. They had to blur her face. You only saw like the middle of her face, which as a kid is so much worse than seeing actual pair of breasts and eyes that are cut out of someone's face. Cause you're like, well, what the hell's so bad? You got to blur it. Right. And they didn't blur a completely black bar. They just kind of pixelated the heck out of it. So you kind of have an idea. Right. So, where are we here? He meets his band twisted around his eyes, fracturing his skull. Meanwhile, so Reggie's we're back at the place. Reggie is begging his grandfather to let him visit his brother, Demon, right, who has just returned to town, and Pam offers to accompany him while bringing Tommy along. They're bringing Tommy along because they got nothing to do with him. Pam and Reggie enjoy the visit, and Damon offers them enchiladas with his girlfriend, Anita. Now, for anybody who has ever been to a model convention with me and I've built anything, you have seen the shirt that says, "Damn enchiladas," one of my favorite quotes from the entire "Damn enchiladas," right? And no one ever knows what it's from. It's from this movie. It's after he eats the enchiladas and he has to run to the outhouse because he's now got to go. As Pam and Reggie are visiting, Damon, okay, we got that. Tommy meets Ethel's son, Junior, and gets into a fight with him. And then he runs away into the forest after realizing what's happening. Okay. Pam and Reggie leave to find Tommy. Damon has a case of diarrhea, which we just talked about, runs to the outhouse. While in the outhouse, Anita, who's messing with him, is killed, right? Upon Pam and Reggie returning to the Institute, they're warned of the disappearance of Matt and Reggie's grandfather. Pam goes to search for them, entrusting Reggie to Violet, Jake, and Robin. At this time, Ethel and Junior are both killed. So they're killed. So Junior's riding around on his motorcycle, and then he gets killed. He slides, gets his head chopped off. And then they reach the window, and this is a throwback to in part three, the window break kind of thing, grabbing her and like killing her. You know, I mean, it's just people are just getting picked off. But again, we are never seeing who the killer is. But at this point, it seems like it might be hard for it to be Tommy. But Tommy just had an incident with Junior. So you're like, well, could he have killed him? You left him alone. You don't see Tommy a ton at this point. We're here. So. As Pam returns, okay. That's when they're both killed. And then Jake, Robin, and Violet are also killed. So the Violet is killed when she's in her room dancing. That's another famous scene because she came up with that dance all on her own kind of thing. They made a big deal about the fact that, like, well, she would hear him coming, not if her headphones are that loud. And the kills here, again, you're hiding the killer. And at this point, you have to know it can't be Jason Voorhees. You have to know. If this far into the movie, you haven't figured out it can't be Jason Voorhees, then there's something wrong with you. Because you have to know it can't be him, because we never would have hit him. And the kills, while the two in the woods are remembered, they are some of the more tame kills in the entire series by way of, you know, being inventive. Right. They're much more the way someone actually might get killed, you know, kind of thing, like a knife to a stomach or, you know, getting whatever, or getting hit with an axe, or like those are things that could happen. Very rarely do I have a weed whacker that's got a 5 foot long. You haven't seen this 5 foot long thing with a razor blade at the end of it. And you're like, what the hell? Where'd that thing come from? Oh, no worry, though. We can pick someone up with it. You'll get there. But the whole thing is like you wind up having all these kills are just keep piling up. So Reggie falls asleep. Reggie wakes up just as Pam returns, and they discover the corpses in Tommy's room, which of course is saying Tommy must have killed them. Moments later, the killer, which now appears to be Jason Voorhees, because now we have a mask on. But, and there's a very big but here, burst into the house. This is the first time we see the mask. But when you watch the mask being in the movie, when Jason Voorhees comes back from the dead, the mask has red triangles. That's Jason Voorhees' mask. This mask has blue triangles. This is not Jason Voorhees. That's how they told you. They tell you it's not him. It can't be Jason Voorhees. He doesn't have a different mask on. He has on red triangles. Every Jason Voorhees mask has red triangles. That's how you know it's him. Yeah. Blue triangles means it's not him. So people didn't pick up on that at first. Well, but it's so obvious, unbelievable.
Yeah, that's you have to be versed in the story from the beginning to understand that. If you're watching it for the first time, you have no idea that the mask is the wrong mask. And so as a new entry into this series, early, you know, at number five, you say that's got to be Jason. Now you say, well, it was Jason, because when you were versed in this from the very beginning, even from when you were real young, I mean, I'm picking this up. I would never remember that. To me, the mask is the mask, and that you've just mentioned this right now. That's news to me. But I did not pick that up because I'm not really interested in the storyline unless it's worthwhile for me to.
Okay, so the thing is, so Jason wears the sack in two,
right?
And then he loses the sack in three when he steals Shelley's mask.
Yeah,
Shelley's mask has red triangles. It's always been that's the way everyone says. Yeah. Well, did it have red triangles? It has red triangles. Shelley's mask when he's wearing it, red triangles. It has red triangles when he puts it on. In four, it has red triangles. It became so known that literally. For Halloween costumes, yeah. If it didn't have red triangles, people weren't willing to buy it.
Yeah.
It became, so when it had blue triangles and the Jason we see in the beginning in the dream sequence has red triangles. As soon as the blue triangles showed up, anybody who had seen parts 1, 2, 3, and 4 were like, wait, that's wrong. And they knew it was wrong.
Yeah,
they didn't know why they changed it. And some people said, wow, that's a continuity error. In your head, you might think that.
Yeah.
But people who have now watched it said, wait, why have they not shown me everything up to this point? Why are they hiding him? You have shown me his killing in 2, 3, and 4. I mean, explicitly showing the killing. Why are we now not showing the killer? Why are we now ramping these things back? Why are we now stepping this down? New beginning or not, every movie, when you watch from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, everything steps up.
Right.
4 was the zenith of that. 5 is like starting over again. And I get the idea of this new beginning, but when you go from 4 to 6, if 5 doesn't exist and 6 is the next one you see, and when you watch 6, you'll understand what I mean. 100% 5 doesn't exist. 5 doesn't need to exist. This story does not need to be here, but I'm going to explain why in a sec. Wait till we get to the end here. Right. So, okay. So now they're going to have a chase, right? He's chasing them through the house and he's, you know, for a dead guy, he's moving pretty good. That's what you're thinking. Like, hey, this guy's dead. He's hell. Remember, Tommy put the blade right through his head. He should have a big chop through the half of his head. Pam and Reggie find the corpses of Matt and Reggie's grandfather because Jason, is there. At this point, this is when Reggie the Reckless comes to the rescue and hits him with the tractor. And you're like, yeah, let's go. But at this point, I guarantee you. Now, I was not there in 1985, but somebody's like, run him over again. Just keep running him over. It is literally why when you watch Jeepers Creepers, the first one, what does the sister say? When Justin Long's like, we got him. She goes, they're never dead. And she backs over him and runs over again. She runs him over 4 or 5 times. Why? Because in the 80s and every other movie, oh, I hit the guy. I got him one time. I hit Michael Myers with a coat hanger. I got him once. Never once. Mm-hmm. Unload the clip. Bury the axe in his head. That is what, and I understand that's not necessarily the thing. I will guarantee you, everyone who is every Gen Xer will agree with me on this one. You empty the clip. You bury the axe in his head. Right. You run him over. You burn him. You do everything you can. And then you don't stop running because we learned a long time ago that they always get up. The killer always gets up. So Reggie the Reckless hits him. And again, people are like, hit him again, Reggie, hit him again. Because that's what you want him to do, right? You want Reggie to like take his head completely off with the tractor, run him over until there's nothing left of him, and then burn him, right? Kind of thing, because that's what you need to do, right? So he's knocked unconscious, right? After being, he's struck by the tractor. Tommy returns and is attacked by the guy who appears to be Jason. He defends himself, but is knocked unconscious after being helped up into the loft area of the barn. Pam and Reggie, who at this time have regrouped, set a trap and they try to kick Jason out the open window in the barn, a direct callback to part 3. Mm-hmm. Right there, which I love. I love the callbacks in this movie they go to, what do you call? And we're going to talk about, talk about callbacks in a second, right? But it's callbacks here, which are great. I love those little callbacks. Like, oh my God, that's from three. Like, we know what's out that window, right? So you know there's got to be something bad on the bottom of that thing, because why would you be kicking them out the window, right? Where in three, they hang them, right? Well, yeah. We can't hang them here because there's no rope, you know? But we know the rope's there from three because she's swinging back and forth, the biker. You know, it's all set up. So during the commotion, Tommy regains consciousness, grabs the machete and cuts the hand off, and he falls from the loft window onto the tractor, the harrow, the back of it, right? Where am I here? And he's killed instantly, right? In the process, the killer's hockey mask comes off, revealing that all along it was Roy Burns, who is literally set up to be the killer from the beginning. When you watch this movie and you know he's the killer, it is so freaking obvious.
Yes.
It is signposted worse than the signpost in Hereditary, that piece of garbage movie. That signpost in that movie, which takes the girl's head off. Sorry, spoiler alert. The movie sucks. Don't watch it. Takes her head off. You signpost it, and you're showing her head. Signpost. Like, literally, they could have said, here it is. Point at it. It is so obviously Roy. Because when you see, and that's when you find out that Roy, his son was the one who was axed to death. When you see his shock at that point, you're like, why are you showing the paramedic? Who gives a crap? Right? Because at first you might think, is that Lou Ferrigno? Because he's got Ferrigno hair. But it's not, because he's way smaller than Lou Ferrigno. But he's literally the only person in the entire movie who is big enough to fit the frame of who's in there. There's not one other decent-sized human being in this movie. None of them. They're all skinny little kids. They're teenagers. They're Reggie. There's not one other person who's even got half the shoulder width he does. So if it's not him, and it's clearly not Jason, then it's some other character we've never seen before.
Yeah. The thing, if you go.
All they had to do, if you had made the sheriff a big, stocky guy,
right?
Make three or four people big and stocky, then we might be guessing who it is, because the sheriff could be the killer too.
Yeah. Well, the sheriff is just seems like a regular guy. The deputy is very tall, but he's thin as a rail.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but they're all regular human beings. Give me someone with some shoulder depth. Okay, so spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Thanksgiving yet, go watch it, because I'm going to spoil it for you, right? When you've seen it, right? So when Patrick Dempsey's the freaking killer at the end, you're like, well, yeah, because that guy's he's not huge. He's skinny. It's a lot of skinny people in that movie. It's not like they had one hulking guy and the killer's Hulk. It's not like it's Hatchet, which you haven't seen the Hatchet movies, right? That's, what's his face? Victor Crowley, Kane Hodder. Kane Hodder is a big dude. Well, you ain't guessing because it's him. You know it's him, right? But he's the biggest dude in the movie.
Right.
Right? But if Kane Hodder was the sheriff, and I'm not saying it would have been Kane Hodder, you make, well, that guy's pretty big. And if the deputy was decent size, or if anyone was decent size besides Roy, you could say, huh, maybe it was one of them. Because you ain't believing it's Tommy Jarvis. He's as skinny as a rail.
Right. No, but Roy only has a brief scene when the bodies are picked up. But watch his facial reaction. To me, when that happened, I said, why does he look kind of?
It's really upset. Yeah.
Well, no, but only that. But he also has this look on his face of it. It's like, just, I don't know how to put it. It's just different. He's different than the other characters, but it's quick.
Yeah.
And so, because I wrote it down, I said, why is he reacting that way? And then at the end of the movie, when you find out it is Roy, you know, then you say, yeah, because if you go back an hour or whatever.
Right. They signposted it there, but you don't know to look for that signpost.
Well, you see, the thing is, that's a very good trick. They did it twice, because I was, when you had the difference in the mask.
Yeah.
Those MacGuffins that are thrown in, that was a Hitchcockian.
Yeah, they're very,
yeah. And so when you do that, it sort of like says, hey, maybe you do know how to make a movie, you know, or a plot.
Right. The thing is this. Remember in part one, because you liked part one, because it's a murder mystery, like going through. And you're like, well, how is this woman doing? Well, if you look at, like Mrs. Voorhees is not a frail, skinny woman. Huh. She's a woman who, like, obviously works hard and whatever, and they put a big sweater on and make her look bigger kind of thing. You're like, okay, I believe she could kill these people. And she's not killing huge. I mean, all the guys are like Kevin Bacon. They're like little skinny nothings. Yeah. And she's killing, teenage girls. She's not killing. She's not like Rambo running through things, whatever. And here you're like, some of the guys are a decent size, but he doesn't kill Vic. Vic is the only guy who's got any size to him, but Vic's real skinny too. Yeah. He's just tall. And he murders Joey. So anyway, it turns out Roy is Joey's father, but Joey always says he's an orphan because he gave him up because obviously there was something wrong here and he didn't want to be, so now we're supposed to hate Roy because he killed all these people and he's a bad dad, kind of thing is that's what we want to go for here. Right. And he was inspired by the Jason killing spree because he has all the newspaper clippings. This movie doesn't have to exist. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This whole movie is self-contained and never has to exist because what they didn't know at this time is they said, well, and this is the John Carpenter, I don't want to make a second Halloween movie. I want to make movies based around Halloween with different themes. And then Halloween makes more money than God. And they say, listen, John, you're going to make another one of these things. And he's like, but I don't want to. And they're like, well, here's a lot of money and the rights to go do these other movies. And he goes, okay. And he makes it. He signs off on them making it. Then they come out with Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which is one of my favorites. But calling it Halloween 3, it doomed that movie from get-go because there ain't a Michael Myers in that movie. Season of the Witch, which we're going to be getting another movie called Season of the Witch later on. If that was what that was called, people would love that movie. That movie's great. But that's the problem. When you call it Halloween, when you call it Friday the 13th, when you call it Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you need to do what it says on the tin. So learning from what happened with Friday the 13th, Halloween 3, not having it just be about, well, we staked the Jason Voorhees idea. People hated this movie for that reason, because it's not Jason. Yeah. It's now a cheat. This whole movie is a cheat. And people say all the time, there's a school of thought out there. People swear that the movie is not a cheat because it's telling Tommy Jarvis's story. And it's very important to Tommy Jarvis's arc. And if you're a Tommy Jarvis person, which I have very friends who are very dedicated, Tommy Jarvis is the paper part of this trilogy. This is important. And people will say, like, movies like Hot Tension are a cheat. But, like, it is just like April Fool's Day is a complete cheat, right? A lot of these movies had a cheat to them because they couldn't just be straightforward slasher. It couldn't just be The Burning, which is literally, it's Cropsey. We know it's Cropsey. He kills them all. That's what Cropsey's doing. Cropsey does Cropsey things, right? But that's the problem. This movie felt like a cheat. When you got to here, the audience felt cheated. They were like, no, that's not the how this is. I just wasted time rooting for Jason to kill people, right. But it's not Jason. It's Roy. And I'm not supposed to like Roy because Roy's a bad dad and he's not a good person. And he said, you're not supposed to like him. Right. So then we have the scene at the hospital, which was tacked on later because they were like, this is what they thought. Well, we're going to take that Jason Voorhees idea. Voorhees himself is dead. Roy was inspired by this. Tommy Jarvis has now, because we see Tommy looking insane at the end of part 4, maybe Tommy Jarvis is the next Jason Voorhees. And that's why the end of the movie is Tommy Jarvis killing Pam after, putting the mask on and killing her. But that's the problem. The mask he puts on, it's got red on it. Yeah. It's exactly Voorhees' mask. That's the idea. And everyone who has paying attention at this point, if you're not furious and storming out, you're paying attention. Wait, the mask is the right color again. Oh, maybe. And they got excited. But no one wanted Tommy Jarvis to be the killer. No one. Everyone wants Tommy to be the hero. No one wants Tommy. What the heck's his last name in the Halloween movies? The little boy that Laurie saves. No one wants him to be the villain in the later Halloween. So they make him the hero again. And he dies for it. But like the whole point is no one wants Tommy Doyle to be the guy. Well, that's the new Halloweens, the ones they just made, Kills and Ends, right? Tommy Doyle's not, he's an old alcoholic and all that, but he's not the villain. We don't want them. You're watching these movies. You don't want them to be the villain. You want some black and white. It's hard because life is all shades of gray, and movies that are shades of gray are far better movies that suck you in and have you there and you're okay, right? And I'll talk about a movie we just saw and I'll mention it in a second here, right? So we have this. There's now Tommy Jarvis at the hospital at the end stabs Pam and that's how it ends. And everyone's like, what the, right? But now knowing, again, somebody who's like studied these movies, knowing what six is, Five doesn't exist. Five is literally, and I wish I was kidding, a dream. Five is the Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, entry in here. This could have very easily, the movie could have ended. Tommy Jarvis stabs her, and then Freddy's like, hey, what's going on? Like, and you'd be like, oh, well, he couldn't do it because they were owned by two different companies. But like, this whole movie's a dream. It never had to happen. No one actually, Roy being a killer doesn't actually have to occur in this world. What happens then is we get to six, and when you watch six, and six is, people will argue four and six are the two best in the entire series. I always say it's seven. To me, seven is the best movie of all of them. Seven is hands down my absolute favorite, has the best kills, the best makeup, my favorite Jason. Like, it's just so freaking cool because I really love Carrie. That's why, you know, kind of thing. But like, when you watch six and you understand zombie Jason now exists because that starts that set of them, six, seven, eight, you know, goes to hell, you know, and then Jason X, like that series is zombie Jason. Jason Voorhees as the, you know, hillbilly backwoods killer is one, two, well, kind of one, two, three, and four. This one doesn't need to exist, and that's there. So we just saw, again, spoiler alerts, because you're going to get them here, because this is what this is about. So if you don't want to hear about this, you know, fast forward to the end. We just saw Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, right?
Yep.
And we, the first three Planet of the Apes of the new ones are all about Caesar. It's how Caesar becomes from an ape to whatever, right? And those movies are phenomenal. How does that movie open? What does the movie open with? Caesar's death.
Caesar's death.
Caesar's death. He dies and they burn him. They give him a funeral pyre. And you're like, what the? We're 40 seconds in and Caesar's dead? Because it has to be. Because what does the next thing say? Generations later.
Yeah. I mean,
it jumps you 50 years in the future.
As soon as the pyre's up.
Yeah.
As the fire's up, that comes on the screen. Yeah.
Because now that's a new beginning.
Yeah.
You paid homage to what happened in 1, 2, and 3, right? You know, what? Dawn, whatever, war, right? All those movies that everyone loves, because those movies are amazing. You didn't throw them out. You didn't throw that out and say they're garbage. No. Now we're telling a story in the future. Okay. So now I'm telling a story in the future. And in that story, there is all kinds of shades of gray. We know by kind of like the way stories are set up, which of the apes probably are on the level, like who want, you know, to be peaceful and do whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's apes you're like, okay, well, the gorillas are always kind of jerks. And this guy's aligned with the gorillas. He's probably not that good. But at the end of the movie, and you know this, is the king really the bad guy? Or the humans, not the echoes, the actual humans who can talk, are they the bad guy? Are both of them evil? Like, probably is really the case. We're going to find out because there's two more movies and then another trilogy beyond it. But that's what I'm saying is you don't know because there's shades of gray. And you said it to me. He goes, you said there was not a lot of action in this movie, right?
And yet it was
thrilling. But every scene, because it built a new world for you.
Yeah.
Go back and watch the first one. Watch the Dawn is the first one, right? When it has John Lithgow, who's got Alzheimer's, and it's, you know, James Franco that movie's heart-wrenching. There's not a lot of action until the very end. That movie's all about trying to find a cure and how can we do this and how can I be scientific and let's go. And it's like, and you're in because you're like, yeah, let's cure Alzheimer's. Let's fight this disease, right? That's what this movie is. It sucks you in because now you're like, wait, what world are we in? Like, we just left where we had humans.
Yeah.
I mean, war is literally a fight the entire time. Woody Harrelson gets there. He's like, let's go. And it's just fighting and killing and because that's what that movie needs to be. This is why this one told a great story. I mean, it's 2.5 hours, that movie, right? Flies by. And there is some battles and there's some killing and stuff. Yeah. But those are where they need to be.
Right. And they're restrained to the point where.
And they're not over the top.
This is not a Marvel movie where the action is so
frantic
on the screen that you start to get nauseous.
Yeah. So what I'm saying, so you had to rebuild it. That's telling a new beginning. That's a new beginning. And if you wanted to do Friday the 13th as a new beginning, a true new beginning, then maybe we need to explore the idea of why Jason Voorhees didn't know. Because we know Jason Voorhees killed these kids because he was teased as a child. His mother was murdered. If you assume, the theory is, that he never truly drowned as a child, but was survived and then watched his mother be slaughtered, which is what the reboot of Friday the 13th is all about, which I love. For those of us who don't love that movie, besides Willa Ford looking amazing in the water, that has some of the best kills. And that made, and that's Derek Myers playing Jason Voorhees, and he's like 6'6". Like, this is a, like, whoa. This is a Jason Voorhees that takes out the whole wall coming through. He's not small, not nothing against Kane Hodder. He's a big dude, but Kane Hodder's tiny next to a guy like Derek Myers, kind of thing, right? So, but if that's what they wanted to do, fine. But they didn't. They gave you a cheat. And what happened? It's still 10 times the money. So not only did he make 100, he made 1,000 times the money back, because it's $2.2 million on investment. You make $22 million on return. Yes. Yeah, you netted $20 million. You made enough money to make the rest of the series. And that's what Frank Manguso Jr. told. Now, Frank Manguso Sr. was in a high-up executive at Paramount. He put Frank, his son, in charge of these movies. And they kept saying, well, if it doesn't make money, you're out. If it doesn't make money, you're out. Well, Frank Manguso Jr. wanted to be a serious, make serious movies like his dad did. But he made these. And he made more money than his dad ever made on a movie. Yeah. And he's considered one of the greatest producers of all time in Hollywood. You know, his dad is. And that's the crazy part, is you can keep making a movie for $3 million, $4 million, and I return 30 or 40, or even return 20 on a three. That you can't argue with that.
Yeah. I mean, the demographics of the population in the United States and across the world, it lended itself to, if one of these movies start to connect with that teenage crowd.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And that was... because that's when when these movies started to proliferate, and the teenage crowd loves these. Going to the movies now was hey, date night,
yeah,
right? I mean, you brought, and one of these movies, you always brought your girlfriend when you went to the movies to see this, because she's going to get, and grab you like you wouldn't believe. And so you get the thrill of not only watching the movie, but having...
Yes, that's what the mask looks like. Yeah. See how obvious that is?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just showed my dad a picture of the red, the mask with the blue, and how blatantly obvious it is.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, no, but that's when we get back. That's what I said. That didn't resonate with me, because the mask is the mask, and all I saw was the outline of the mask, because I'm not, I don't follow these movies religiously, and it's, and but again, this was, when you look at why these movies made so much money, are teenagers going to go see Ben-Hur? Or the equivalent, whatever. No. I mean, even one of the best movies of their, Carpenter's The Thing, was panned like you wouldn't believe, and it got panned to the point where it was almost an X-rated movie, so it just didn't make any money at the time, and then all of a sudden it got re-released.
The problem with Carpenter's The Thing is that Carpenter's The Thing is not a date night popcorn slasher.
Yeah.
It is a serious, I mean, you, it's a serious science fiction movie, and it is a serious horror movie. And the people who are going to see Carpenter's The Thing, who like that kind of stuff, we're reading Starlog, we're reading Cine Fantastique, we're reading Fangoria. Yeah. Those are the people who went to see it. Most teenagers weren't, I mean, if they're reading Fangoria, maybe, but Fangoria covered a lot. I mean, they covered that, but they covered these movies. Why not? Jason Voorhees on your cover, Freddy Krueger was really the thing. For you put Freddy on the cover of Fangoria, you spiked your sales.
Yeah.
Tom Thibodeau talks about it all the time. He goes, I would spike the sales. New Freddy thing, new still from the movie, put it on the cover. Why? Spike the sales. Jason Voorhees spiked the sales.
Yeah.
You put Hellraiser on the cover. When it first happened, no one knew what Hellraiser was. Yeah. Then Hellraiser came out. They go, ooh, Pinhead in the cover, spike the sales. People like that character. They like having the bad guy who is, you know, not necessarily has to be, because Jason doesn't say anything. Doesn't have to be funny. I mean, Freddy became funny, and that became a big thing of his. But people really attached themselves to the slasher. You became a fan of whoever.
Well,
you
know, that's why the name of this movie is Friday the 13th.
Well, they own the rights to that, too.
Yeah, but I mean, but if this movie had just said A New Beginning, you know, and whatever you other tagline you want to put on it.
No one would ever see it. Well, but the thing is, you're also treading on the same thing. We see that now. You see that with this, they'll take the name, like the new show on CBS, and it's called Matlock. And then the trailer, right? And I'm like, they're really, and it's a woman. And you're like, it's Kathy Bates, right? Kind of thing. And so it's like, you know, and her whole thing is like, she's a Southern woman. She's like, whatever. She's like, yep, just like the old TV show. And I'm like, oh, okay. So instead of saying, this is now reinventing Matlock to be a woman, it's right. Like, my name happens to be the same, and we're going to make fun of things. And it's like, okay, that at least is smart, because what you're going to do is, everyone who watched Matlock, and it seems crazy, right? Because you're like, there's a lot of people my age who watched a lot of Matlock because it was on during the day forever. You just kind of watched it, that kind of thing. And not me. I didn't care for it. But I'm saying is, but who would go and watch that show? And they'd be mad if it was like trying to ape off of that. But it's building off of just the name. The name itself is worth more than often what's on the film.
Well, right. Well, like you saw on TV, if you are an NCIS fan, there's, what is it, five of them?
No, they used to be. Yeah, they've come back. Yeah, I mean, Or Law and Order. But I'm saying you put Law and Order in front of something. It does the Law and Order, the one trial by jury. What did that last? Four episodes of, and they made nine. Like you had to go buy the DVDs just to see the rest. What happens? And shockingly, guess what? Nothing happened. So, but the name is worth more, and I get that.
You should have put the eyes on the show, but then you have to have the quality and the to have repeat customers.
Yeah. And well, the one thing I can guarantee about this, again, a March release on this. Schools are starting still in session, but it's still date night, starting to get warmer, starting to whatever, getting closer to spring break and stuff like that. And a lot of people went and saw it, Dad, because movie tickets were not exactly like $14, $15 a piece. They were like $3, $4 a piece.
When was the next one made after this?
Next year. '86. Yeah. Because you couldn't sit on that money. So Frank Mancuso Jr. Hit it, and he's got him start. Six was already starting to be talked about, but then they changed directions and did six the way they did because you couldn't sit on that money.
So, you know, the thing is, If this is the outlier in the series,
it is,
and yet it made, you know, 10 times more than it cost to make. What was the reaction of the fans that if you were disappointed with this after you went and spent all your money?
Oh.
What would that lend you to do when the next one comes out?
So okay, am I going to be disappointed again? Nope, because they show it to you in the freaking trailer. They're like, he's back. That's the tagline.
Oh.
He's back. And they show you Jason Voorhees with the correct colors. And everyone's like, that's Jason Voorhees. Okay. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
So it's for those of us who are older and remember, it's New Coke. What's New Coke? New Coke was some crappy version of Coke they put out. And it was like, ugh. And they're like, oh, no, don't worry. We'll bring back Coke Classic. And Coke Classic is what Coca-Cola is now still called, Coke Classic.
Yeah.
People love Coke Classic because they're like, because Coke was just kind of like, so they put out a bad version. People hated it. All right, we'll give you the other one back. And they're like, yeah, I love this, right? Because it drives up that nostalgia feel.
Yeah, you wonder,
they weren't trying to make a bad movie. They were trying to change
the
direction of it.
No, not making a bad movie. I'm just saying, that, you know, does that put a sour taste in your mouth for the next one? In that, are they going to disappoint me again? And the trailer, like you said,
they
obviously realized that maybe word of mouth after this, you know, reviews said that.
So, okay,
there
is
no Jason.
You ready for this? So I popped over the page. Friday 13th, Part 6 came out August 1, 1986. $3 million budget, just under $20 million on return. So what are we talking about? So one was 2.2, came back to 22. So it's a little dip, but, you know, okay. So we're talking about still the same kind of return on investment. And that literally, the cover. Jason lives. They are showing you his freaking, he's here.
Yeah.
And they wanted that. That's what, okay. So, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, which is referred to as the gayest horror movie of all time because of the amount of homosexuality and stuff that rampant through the whole thing. People either love that movie or hate that movie. And I can really appreciate what that movie does. It has some amazing lines. It has you're all my children now. It has all these things. But people hate it because it was so wrong. They did things that were wrong in that universe that couldn't happen because you set rules and you broke your rules and you can't do that. That aside, when Nightmare on Elm Street 3 came out, Dream Warriors, they said, turn it all the way up. Turn it all. Dream Warriors is probably, it's not the first one I saw. I saw 4 first out of all of them. Dream Warriors is everyone's favorite, is the one that has the best special effects, the best of the, everything is to the like balls to the wall level kind of thing, right? And you're like, why? Because they were like, people are going to remember number 2, which did great business, but it didn't quite give us the Freddy we wanted. So now we got Freddy back. We got Freddy joking. We got Freddy kicking this thing up. And then what happened is it made Freddy Krueger, and it pains me to say this, to leap way ahead of Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees doesn't talk. He's a murdering guy in the hall, whatever, right? Doesn't say anything. Michael Myers, The Shape, doesn't talk, right? Leatherface, doesn't talk. And in fact, there was no, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 didn't come out until 82. That came out in 74, right? And they were just like, what are we going to do? Let's bring this property back. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 cannot be any more different than Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we reviewed it, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty much a documentary kind of thing, kind of way it's shot. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is insane. It's nuts, right? It's just, and of course, and it's Dennis Hopper because he's nuts, you know, kind of thing. And the whole movie's nuts. The dueling chainsaw fight on the highway, the like whatever, all the crazy stuff, the City of Bones, which literally they fall into. If you ever wonder where Rob Zombie got the idea for House Thousand Corpses, all the underneath, watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. It's all there. Literally, I think could be the same sets. It's not, but it could be, right? But that's what I'm saying. So you have a movie like Friday the 13th Part 5, which it got people in the theater. It pissed people off, but it kind of set them up. It is basically the new Coke. It kind of set people up for, well, here's your real Jason Voorhees. And then six, huge business. Seven, people are like, what? You're going to have Jason versus Carrie? Let's do this thing. Like, and then eight, the whole idea of Jason Takes Manhattan, even though it doesn't really happen much in Manhattan, the poster for that movie got them sued. That's the first thing I want to do. It's I Love New York, and it's Jason slashing through the heart. It got them sued. They were like, yes, we can't buy. The lawsuit was worth it.
Yeah.
Because I can't buy that publicity. Every single news channel put it up there. It is, I know that was not their plan. Put Santa Claus killing people in a trailer on TV. Why? Because you don't have to market the movie anymore. Silent Night, Deadly Night never had to be marketed past the first week of it. Because every parents group told, don't see this movie. God, don't save Christmas. It's everywhere. Those idiots, those freaking morons did exactly what they were supposed to do. Silent Night, Deadly Night very easily could have come and gone and it would have been fine. Never had a sequel. Never had something. The sequel. You remember the sequel is nuts. Like Garbage Day. That was an insane movie, right? So you never had to even have those sequels. You could have had the first one and it could have died, but you made it bigger. And Silent Night, Deadly Night to this day, still people who've never seen it know it. I mean, every year at Christmas, shirt I wear, it's got a Santa Claus with an axe. It's got Leona Quigley stabbed through the boobs with the thing coming through. Why? Because I love it as a Christmas movie, but they could have let it die off, but they didn't. They kept pushing that. We got to protect the children. Right, keep protecting the children right to the bank. And that movie only lasted a couple of weeks and it got closed, right? Because it was just too much backlash. Middle America was not ready for that yet. But on the coast, that thing, you know, was huge.
Yeah.
So anyway. But yeah, so Friday the 13th, part five. And I said to you, when you first said this, you're going to understand why this is the most hated movie in the entire series. And it is. And a lot of people hate this and they also hate Jason Goes to Hell. And when we get to Jason Goes to Hell, which you probably don't remember seeing, you saw it once a long time ago. You'll understand. Cause that's a movie that does things you're not supposed to do. And when you do things you're not supposed to do, they have a problem with it. And everyone's like, well, why does Jason X work then? Cause Jason X is still Jason Voorhees. He's just, you know, 500 years in the future.
Yeah.
You know, in space, and it's got funny things and weird, but it's not exactly the same as Daniel, but you don't have to make the exact same movie every time. You have to stay true to what your character is, which is why when they eventually got Jason versus Freddy, some people are like, well, that's not really the, and like it is, it's true to their characters. It's putting a little more spin on them, but it's still true to Freddy. It's still true to Jason, but that's all anyone ever wanted. Anyone ever wants is stay true to who they are. When you derivate off of what you have, people get upset. People get upset with the Rob Zombie Halloween movies because it's not the same Michael Myers. But does Rob Zombie really derivate that much from it? No, he just is telling it a little differently. And people don't like his Rob Zombie and they don't like him. But when you watch those Halloween movies, Halloween, the second one's a little weird because it kind of gets a little like crazy with stuff. But they're not. There's nothing there. You're like, there's nothing really wrong with these. Yeah. It's just sometimes you feel like maybe it didn't need to exist, but it's not the original Michael Myers. And that's part of the problem when they're talking about remaking Friday the 13th and remaking Nightmare on Elm Street and remaking these things. People are like, why? Why are you remaking them? Because I don't want new. I don't want that. I want what I have. I want this thing. Well, we're going to make it for a whole new generation. Well, this generation doesn't want this. You know what I mean? You don't make a movie with this generation, make it a minute and a half long on TikTok. That's all they care. Yeah. They don't care. So if you're going to make it for Gen Xers, then make it what we want. And those movies tend to hit well. And go, and then that's why things are successful.
Yeah.
And so, but
I mean, when you have me watch a movie that maybe I've seen 20, 30 years ago or whatever, I go into watching all the movies that we review if I have no knowledge of a lot of it with an open mind.
Right.
And then I have this predilection that, okay, we're gonna see a Michael Myers movie. We're gonna see a Freddy movie or a Jason movie. There's going to be
this,
and this.
Yeah.
And that is good kills, dump kids, sex, and then we're going to have the end. And so, but if the story hooks me right away, that's something like I didn't see. And that's why when like the Rob Zombie remake of Halloween, it's really good. I mean, the original one is great.
Yeah.
But watching the remake and seeing how he interpreted how the...
Well, because he filled in all the blanks.
Right.
So that's the problem. See, that's what people didn't want. People wanted to fill in their own blanks. And Rob Zombie said, no, here are the blanks. I filled them in. And that's what people are mad about because they filled in the blanks.
And yet that hooked me right away. So now all of the killings and the other things, now I understand why it's going on. And I appreciate all the things, but there are, like on this one, I knew when coming in, I had my list of when to go and I ticked them off. Just like you said, every
20 seconds, you have to have a kill or whatever.
Right.
It was stolen from porn.
And that's why when at the end of this movie or towards the end, all of a sudden he's killing people left and right. I mean, I wrote down, the patients are dying like flies.
Yeah.
I said, that's not how these movies
usually go. But that's what they tried to do. They tried to make it different. They tried to change things and change things up because they were giving you stuff you weren't expecting.
Well, I think one of the issues was is that you got a 90-minute movie.
Hey, yeah.
You're already...
You got to kill some
you're
people.
You're already at... There's only 10 minutes to go in this movie.
You got
to
kill the other six people.
You got to kill them all.
Yeah, but I'm saying but that's what winds up happening. They're trying to change up the movie. They tried to change things in how they were making the movie to try to make it different and whatever. But by doing that, you then wind up having too many people. You can't have that many people alive at the end. It's literally, what's is it Leviathan or Deep Star 6, one of them, that how did I survive at the end? I should have been dead hours ago. Like they literally say it like, how did I survive this? Yeah. Right? Because you should have died 10 minutes ago,
but
you know?
The thing, they followed the formula of these movies pretty much all the way through. And there was when the scene is, now we know it's Roy at the end, but we don't know it's Roy, and he's got on the wrong mask, and he's got the machete, and she's got the chainsaw. I said, when she gets up, says the chainsaw is going to run out of gas.
And it doesn't have, even if it didn't run out of gas, chainsaw is the worst weapon to fight with.
Well, no, but
because once you hit the chain with the blade, the chain comes off.
Yeah.
Then the chainsaw is useless.
Yeah.
But Joe Bob Briggs taught us this.
But you see now, Roy is just a regular guy.
Yeah.
He's not Jason Voorhees.
He's right.
So Jason Voorhees would just walk
right into it. Yeah, right.
So I said, well, the chainsaw's got to die. It's got to go out again. And sure enough, it did. So I said, that's what I wrote down. I said, they kept following the formula right to the very end. And then they gave you the
what a
reveal,
twist. Yeah.
The reveal.
Yeah, they,
and so
they
now,
had not Shyamalan ding dong it.
And you know, a lot of movies do that. And you can't stand the movie for the first three quarters. Then they give you this fantastic ending, and you remember the movie as being great. Yeah. And so that makes you go back and watch it again to say, what did I miss?
Right. The problem is that, you know, again, fans of this were, you weren't making this movie for an older crowd. You're making this for teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
And teenagers don't like that stuff. So, but it made a lot of money. And some people, I'm sure there's somebody out there, this is their favorite Friday the 13th movie. I'm not sure who it is. I've never met that person. And I know a lot of people who have Friday the 13th tattoos like I do and who have watched these movies and like have all the shirts and have everything else. And it is one of the ones that people dislike. It is always, most people, this is their least favorite, along with Jason Goes to Hell, as their least favorites. And I actually probably like this one more than Jason Goes to Hell. And you'll see what happens in Jason Goes, because Jason Goes to Hell, it just turns into a disaster. It just turns into just an absolute mess. But this one at least kind of stayed with that 80s feel. Anyway.
I guess I've got something to look forward to.
Huh? No, well, you got a while to go. You got to get through 6, 7, 8. We got to get, and then get to 9. But Jason Goes to Hell has literally the best opening of any one of these movies of all time, which literally became a commercial on TV. They turned it into a Nike commercial on TV, which is the best Nike commercial of all time. Where the woman's outrunning the killer and he's there. Like, I'm like, that's the best commercial of all time. And they banned it because we can't show women in peril. I go, what's in peril is that guy's health? Dude, eat a salad. Yeah. The hell's wrong with you? Smoking and eating cheeseburgers ain't helping, buddy. Anyway. All right, folks. So normally the second episode that we do, sometimes, I mean, we just did one in July. We had a feedback episode right before this, obviously. And we always kind of try to then do You know, we might do a second feedback one in August if need be, but we don't have enough to kind of warrant that. So we're going to move it off. But we're going to do this year, we're going back 45 years to a movie that has been ripped off, oh, I don't know, a million times. The movie's called Alien, and they literally made, I don't know, just how many, just, I mean, Luke could probably speak better to this. How many Italian ripoffs of Alien exist? Like, how many times did Roger Corman rip off Alien? Literally the movie that has been ripped off more, I mean, outside of maybe, I'm trying to think what else, because Alien's pretty much ripped off all the time. Like, that, like, or the spaghetti westerns, obviously, ripped off all kind of things. But you know what I'm saying? But, like, when you look at, like, how many movies came out in the late 70s, early 80s, basically early 80s, that are just Alien, not Aliens, Alien ripoffs? Holy cow. Holy cow. But we're going to talk about the original.
Which is, that's the original ripoff.
Oh, no. Oh, right. But that's the irony of it, right, is that it's the first movie I ever covered was, it came from, it's Terror from Beyond Space, which is Alien rips off. But here's the difference. Ridley Scott openly says he's ripping off that movie. The Italian people are like, oh, we never heard of an alien before. You know, I don't know why Mario just showed up. Mario, you know, kind of thing, right? But that's what they know. Oh, we never heard of this. I've never heard of it. Yeah, this movie's called Alien Contagion. I don't know why it's this. And there's eggs that explode and, like, aliens come out of them. Yeah. But, so,
I mean, when is, I guess, the, it's already out. The latest one.
Romulus. This is right. Yeah, it's right around this time. Yeah. It's coming out right. That's August, mid August.
Yeah.
So right around this time, people are hearing this.
Supposedly, it ties in Prometheus and the other, because that was the one, the problem I had with the aliens. As they started to go through the, like, number two, well, two is great.
Well, Aliens
then,
is amazing.
Then the third one at the prison was tremendous.
But remember, that was also cut back from what it was supposed to be. If we ever got the real Alien 3, that would have been, I think, I mean, people would have probably been one of the most beloved ones, but they cut it and it was changed and things were done. So, but even that is still good. It's just not.
And then the one that is the prequel is, you've got to watch that a lot of times.
Because what, Prometheus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because Resurrection also occurred in there.
Yeah.
And Resurrection has some good parts, but then it's kind of weird. I like Prometheus. I know people don't like Prometheus, but I really like Prometheus. And I bought the extended cut kind of thing that has the extra deleted scenes put back in. And I really liked it. The problem was, it's not Alien. It's not Aliens.
Right.
So if it's not Alien and it's not Aliens, it's hard to get people to buy in. Yeah. It's like the later Terminator, not Terminator 2, but like after Terminator 2, basically anything after Terminator 2 that are Terminator movies, whether you like them or not, they're not to Terminator.
Right.
And it's not even Terminator 2. Yeah. So like, well, those movies are just, you set the bar too high.
Yeah.
Well, and Prometheus is really good.
Yeah, but the problem with Prometheus, just like in any other one, you don't have the story go two or three, even four movies long, and then go to the prequel. Because now you've got all the characters that you're in.
Well, you know where we're going, so you know this can't end. It has to end a certain way.
A good one would be this: when we had Star Wars, A New Hope, that was
three,
four.
Yeah, four.
That was four. They had four, five, and six. Then you go back and you do one.
Well, one, two, and three.
One, two, and three. And the problem is, there's none of the characters.
Okay, but that's different though. Because when they did those, if you knew going into Star Wars that it was four, it says volume four or chapter four, A New Hope.
Right.
So if there were books about what happened in Big Bad War kind of thing, the real difference is how you make a prequel that works. And again, I know people love the prequels, and Phantom Menace was actually phenomenal at the time. I mean, he was cutting edge. The problem is the other ones, I don't think had enough punch. The Clone Wars themselves would have made a great set of movies, but that's another story. Rogue One is my favorite Star Wars movie of all time. I know people, that's blasphemy to say, but I love Rogue One. Rogue One is literally the only one of them, out of all of them, I probably could sit down and watch more than once.
Once, yeah.
Right? Because just the way it is. It's just, I'm not a Star Wars guy. I never have been at that level. I used to be, but I'm not anymore. But Rogue One, you know, we saw Rogue One in the theater. That happens literally like minutes before New Hope starts.
Right.
And you're sitting there going, man, Jyn Erso, she would be a great... We know they have to die. Kelly had never seen that movie. I made her watch it, and she's like, what, they have to die? Why do they have to die? I go, well, honey, where would they have gone? Why would they not have Jyn Erso help out the rebels? Wouldn't she be? She goes, yeah, she's amazing. I go, yeah, she's like the best character, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't she be really freaking useful instead of Luke Skywalker, who looks directly into a lightsaber before he turns it on? He almost killed himself halfway through the movie. Literally, if that lightsaber turns on, dead Luke, series is over, right? You can't even have Jedi whatever anyway, right? So, but I said to her, I said, what happened? She goes, oh, that's a good point. I go, right, that's why this movie's so good. Because you're like, I want them to survive. Why can't they get out? Why can't... You should root for them. When I don't care what happens to the people, I'll die, live, yeah. Great. You, there's not one person in there. Even like I forgot his name. The guy, the pilot who's with her. He would be really useful. They all would be really useful. The rebellion needs them.
Right.
They need them.
Yeah.
And then the end, Vader's coming through, and it's like, well, okay, but of course Vader's coming through because that's how the other movies start. You literally can butt the movies together, and it's like he's still doing the same stuff.
Yeah. You know, you've got to watch these in order because they do build a story.
The story always goes, I mean, if you watched all of the Star Wars in order, it makes sense. But they did the Lord of the Ring trilogy and then went back and told The Hobbit because they didn't have the technology to tell The Hobbit until Lord of the Rings invented the stuff. Now, watching The Hobbit movies, there's nothing wrong with them, but they all feel flat compared to the trilogy, to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because the Lord of the Rings trilogy is literally groundbreaking. And then The Hobbit just feels like, okay, The Hobbit itself, the story, and whether you love it or not, is not the same level of story as the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And when you watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy, in all honesty, you know, the first Lord of the Rings blew people away. Two Towers set the bar higher. Return of the King was like, you're sitting here for 3.5 hours and you don't care.
You don't care.
You don't care. Your bladder is stretched beyond belief, but you don't care.
And you know, those are the types of movies that you don't want them to end.
Well, but that's when they put the extended edition. Like, no one's going to want to sit for 4 hours per movie. And yet people do. Yeah. They show those in the theaters. They have a special thing where you buy the pass, you spend the entire day.
Yeah.
And people watch the movie. They put an intermission in. That you just, like, people still do that stuff. Why? Because when the story's good, it's there. And we're kind of getting far afield, I know, from Friday the 13th. But when you're telling stories overall, I know why, because I brought up Alien, right? And Alien's a perfect example. That's the next movie we're covering here, right? Aliens, many people believe, and I've held this, I like Alien. And I, because I love it, the terror from outer space. But the problem is, Aliens is the better movie as a movie. The rewatchability of Aliens is light years better than Alien. Because once you know what's going to happen in Alien, it's like an old Dark House movie,
right
kind of thing. Yeah. You kind of know where the jump scares are coming, whatever. In Aliens, you're rooting. You still root. You still want them to get out of there. You still want, Drake not to get sprayed with the acid, not to whatever. Kind of. If you haven't seen Aliens, good Lord, catch up. You're 40 years behind almost, right? But I'm saying is, like, you don't want those things to happen. You don't want Vasquez to get stuck in there with Gorman. You don't want these things to happen. You want Paul Reiser. You want, him to get his comeuppance beforehand. You want those things to happen. You know it won't. But you still want it to. And when they put the special edition out with the extra gun scene and whatever, you're like, oh, yeah, more. Give me more. That's the important part. When you have a movie where you're like, I don't want more. I don't want more of this. Yeah. It's different. So anyway, like I said, we're getting a little far afield. We will be back the end of August with Alien, the original 1979. If you haven't seen it, where you been? And then we got some absolute classic bangers coming out the end of the year that will be very different than Alien or Friday the 13th or any of that stuff. All right. So folks, that about does it for us here. So, like we say, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters? Or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?